Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Elisa Campbell, number 30632, and I represent the Department of Healthcare Policy and Financing. And for the record, I plan on reserving about 5 minutes for rebuttal and rebuttal to the cross appeal. The error that was committed below is the district court did not follow U.S. Supreme Court instructions to use tort benchmarks when allocating settlements in Medicaid lien reimbursement cases. Therefore, the department is asking this court to reverse the district court ruling to the extent it found that SP's past medical damages equals the amount that Medicaid paid on her behalf.
Which case is tort benchmarks? The first one or
Woes? The second one, okay. Woes that came out in 2013.
Okay.
It's subsequent to the Allborn case. The department is going to ask this court to allocate SP's past medical damages as the amount of medical assistance that was billed on her behalf.
But isn't the amount that's billed, they never pay what's billed, and the statute says that the reimbursement cannot be more than what was paid. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And the department is not asking to be reimbursed for anything more than its lien, which is $143,000. But what we're talking about is allocating the past medical damages.
I understand that. But hasn't there been an evolving law which ends up saying that you can't have a formula of one size fits all circumstances? I mean, that's one of the basics. Secondly, the formula that's used, which you're challenging by the trial court, has to be reasonable, right?
Yes, sir.
Are you saying that the formulation that was used here by the trial court is unreasonable, that has no rational basis?
Yes, sir, and let me explain why. You've raised a couple of issues. First of all, the department is not challenging using a formula that determines what percentage.
But the numbers that are put in the formula, that's what you're challenging.
Yes, sir. We are challenging the numerator in this formula,
right?
Because the result is essentially never reasonable to the taxpayers who paid SP's medical claims and other, of course, Medicaid recipients' medical claims, because with this formula, the Medicaid lien will never be fully reimbursed, no matter how large the settlement or how small the Medicaid lien, unless the individual settles for exactly what they've estimated their total damages to be in their underlying tort case, which I can't say that never happens, but I'm guessing that's a pretty rare situation. So the Woes court, the U.S. Supreme Court in Woes, instructed whatever allocation method is used, it must be reasonable in the mine run of cases, meaning in the typical cases, which this would be a typical case. There are always going to be outliers. But with this district court formula, it's the outlier cases that the Medicaid lien may be fully reimbursed if the person settles for exactly what they've estimated their damages to be. In the typical cases, the taxpayers will never be reimbursed, and that can hardly be the result that the federal Medicaid statutes were aiming for, or either of the U.S. Supreme Court cases addressing Medicaid lien reimbursement.
So let me just back that up a minute. Medicaid has no voice in the settlement of the underlying tort case, is that right? Like an insurer might if they were involved.
Under the Colorado statute, the department can participate in settlement negotiations.
Okay. And in this case, they elected not to.
They elected not to. Okay. There are literally probably hundreds of settlements going on at any one time. The department simply doesn't have the resources to participate.
So it seems to me what you're saying is the plaintiff, SP, by virtue of taking a substantial cut when she settled the case, therefore has to bear more of the risk with respect to the medical reimbursement costs than she would have had she not taken such a substantial cut. That's basically what you're saying, isn't it? She bears the burden of her settlement, of her maybe unfavorable settlement. That's what you're saying. She should bear the burden and Medicaid should not.
Not necessarily. It's true that without SP and her tort attorney procuring this settlement, the department would not get reimbursed. I agree with that. The department agrees with that. Under Colorado statute, the department is required to contribute to her attorney's fees and costs for procuring that settlement, and they do. In this case, the district court judge ordered the department to contribute 12.5%, reduce the lien by another 12.5%. So while the Medicaid recipients take on that task at the tort court level, the department does contribute to those attorney's fees when that time comes.
Okay.
So the formula that the district court used in the denominator, the bottom variable, is the $4.9 million, which is a figure that the parties agreed to at the district court level. And that number comes from the economic loss report prepared in SP's underlying tort case. While the parties couldn't exactly agree to the total amount of estimated damages from the economic loss report, we were only off by about $200,000. So they agreed to split the difference for the $4.9 million. So that number is a benchmark from the tort case. It essentially represents SP's universe of damages, what she expected to prove had her case gone to trial. But the district court then inserted the Medicaid paid amount as the numerator, the top variable. But that is not a benchmark that the tort court ever would have used, as Judge Nay was questioning earlier. In Colorado, under the collateral source rule,
go ahead.
The Colorado Supreme Court has held that you use the amount that's billed. In Walmart v. Crossgrove, the Colorado Supreme Court held that the correct measure of damages is the necessary and reasonable value of medical services rendered. And the necessary and reasonable value of medical services rendered is the amount that was billed on behalf of
the purpose of the collateral source rule is to protect the plaintiff as against the wrongdoer defendant, and not let the wrongdoer defendant gain a windfall from the fact that a plaintiff bought insurance, right? That's basically what the collateral source was about. Here is a little different, because it's Medicaid.
Correct.
And it seems to me, I want to try to cut through this. I turn these numbers every which way, and it dawned on me that what we're really arguing about here, I think, is that Medicaid had negotiated a discount. Medicaid was able to get the providers to take about 20%, like every insurance company, I guess, does.
Right.
And the question here is, who should get the benefit of that discount? In the regular case, doesn't the plaintiff get the benefit of the discount? She bought the insurance, in the insured case, she bought the insurance and she gets the benefit of the discount. You're asking us here, it seems to me, to give the benefit of the discount to Medicaid and take it away from SP. And that seems to me what this case is really about. Who should get the benefit of that discount?
And Your Honor, I would submit that it is SP that's getting the benefit of the discount. First of all, she, of course, doesn't pay for Medicaid. That is a program that's provided by the taxpayers of Colorado to pay her medical bills. If not for Medicaid, what was billed on her behalf is the $776,000 by the hospital and other medical care providers. If SP did not have Medicaid when she had obtained her settlement, she would be on the hook for repaying that $776,000 rather than the $143,000 that Medicaid paid. So she's saving $600,000 right off the top. Here, she also wants to reduce
right.
this.
But now you want to take some of it back, it seems to me. Go ahead, sorry.
Well, in a perfect world, when these tort settlements happen, the tortfeasor would pay Medicaid directly. That mm-hmm. money goes directly to Medicaid because it's the tortfeasor that should have been paying her medical assistance that whole time.
Right. Medicaid would have been subrogated, but they wouldn't have been subrogated here if they were insured, because the make whole rule would prevent that. She wasn't made whole, but here Medicaid isn't subject to the make whole rule. So that doesn't
That's
help
true.
Us either.
That's true. The best I can tell you is there's absolutely nothing in the federal Medicaid statutes or in the Allborn case or the Woes case that says Medicaid lien must take a discount. The cases simply hold you have to allocate the medical damages portion of the settlement to determine what part of the settlement is exposed to repayment of the Medicaid lien.
All right, so let me go back to your original position. Tort benchmark, you say, determines. What tort benchmark tells us that the discount that Medicaid negotiated ought to go to Medicaid and not to the plaintiff under these circumstances?
And let me make sure I understand your question. What the department is asking is that the Medicaid lien be reimbursed out of whatever portion of the settlement represents medical damages. That's all we can collect.
But excuse me, but isn't that Medicaid damages limited by what they actually paid? The billing, I don't want to call it, you know, degrade what the billing is, but that's unrealistic. I mean, Medicaid never intends to pay what is billed for the service, right?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor. And I let me try to clarify. The department will never seek to recoup anything more than what they paid. We're just talking about allocating damages.
I understand that.
Okay. And in the tort case, her past medical damages would have been what was billed on her behalf. So we're simply asking the court to plug in that formula, that figure, the amount of medical assistance billed, divided into her total universe of damages. That will give you the percentage of her past medical damages, and then apply that percentage to the settlement.
But the trial court found, as Judge Day was hinting at, that that number you want us to use is an unrealistic number. It never would have been the amount that was actually paid by the plaintiff. It's, we all know that it's an inflated number that providers have to use because of the discount system. I don't mean to diminish that, but we all know that. So why should we use a number that the trial court found was unrealistic? I forget the words that he used, but he basically made it almost a finding of fact that the number doesn't have any significance.
But if the hospital bills $776,000, they have a lien for that amount, so it's not unrealistic. I mean, however we feel about how hospitals bill, that would be the hospital lien, the $776,000.
The lien against who?
Against
the patient?
SP. If Medicaid was not a player in this scenario.
If it was not a player.
Yes, sir.
But here we have them a player, and we're
correct.
Talking about their interests.
Yes, sir, I understand. And at the end of the day, again, we're just trying to allocate the settlement, and then we talk about reimbursing the lien out of whatever portion has been allocated as the past medical damages. In the underlying tort case, past medical damages would be the amount billed, not the amount paid.
Your time's kind of running out.
Thank
you. May want to say, but let me ask you one last
question. Yes, sir.
Is there any case elsewhere in another state, in another federal district, that dealt with a situation like this? I didn't see any in your brief, but I can't admit I read them all.
And I have not found any either, Your Honor. Following the Alborn case, courts across the country were more or less all over the board trying to figure out what this allocation meant, how to do it. Some courts relied on the Alborn formula, which the facts don't comply with this case
right at
all. Following WOS clarified and gave the four options of how to allocate and instructions on if you ask a court to do the allocation, look at the tort benchmarks. And since WOS, there really haven't been any cases. There have been some cases out of Florida, but dealing with statutory presumptions, but no case that really talks about here's the formula that we think you should use.
Or even a case that where the court said this is the formula I think that should be applied, as Judge Stern did in this case.
That's correct.
Okay, we have a clean slate. Okay.
And my thought is, since WOS has cleared it up of how courts should do it, and that's why we have a lack of cases following.
Thanks, Counsel.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Eric Solon, representing counsel for SP. With me at counsel table is Fred Paoli, who was counsel in the ski accident case that was the underlying settlement. Ms. Campbell, may it please the court. Let me address the last question first. There is a case that was decided post-WOS, and it's in our brief on page 15. That's called Yang versus Portage County, which was from the Eastern District of Wisconsin Federal District Court, which basically was said that the Alborn case mandated in a case where the state didn't have any other way of having a formula, that you should take the total damages of the case, the Medicaid recovery, and reduce it pro rata. That's exactly what the trial judge did in this case. That was a reasonable and construction of the statute, and that his decision should be affirmed on that basis.
Yang was a denial of summary judgment, I think, or something, wasn't it?
Well, the only issue in Yang is, unlike this case, they did not have The attorneys came into court with an estimate of their own of the total damages. And so the court remanded it and said, well, you know, I'm not going to accept your estimate of damages. Come, you know, either work this out or come back to court. In this case, we are fortunate enough to have had a stipulation as to what the total damages were. So really, this case is identical to Allborn, because in Allborn, there was a stipulation as to what the total damages were. There was, obviously, we knew what Medicaid had paid, and the Supreme Court upheld a formula that said, well, you recovered 1/6 of your total damages, so therefore we're going to reduce the lien by that 1/6. Right. Now, that was a stipulation.
But they didn't argue in that case the total amount that had been billed. That wasn't a factor.
No, and here's why you cannot use billed. First of all, under Colorado law, as you know, the collateral source rule is an evidentiary rule to protect the plaintiff in a jury trial. But then the trial judge has an obligation under the statute, that's 1321.11.6, which basically says the trial judge, once the jury returns a verdict, has an obligation to reduce that to what essentially would be paid unless the plaintiff had contributed something like insurance. In a Medicaid case, the plaintiff doesn't pay anything for Medicaid, so the damages would have to be reduced to what was actually paid. There's another reason why that would be the case also, and that is, as the Supreme Court said in the Allborn case, the basis for this recovery is assignment law. And there's a federal statute, it's in our brief, that basically says Medicaid gets to recover what the recipient assigned to Medicaid, and that is items and services under the Medicaid plan. So it's not what is billed, it's what is paid that's the relevant consideration.
Well, that's the maximum that they can recover. But the question is, what numbers should be used for the formula to ascertain the proportionality?
Right, and the only reasonable way of looking at that is what is paid, because...
Well, they don't think so.
Well, no, but I think, but the question is, the trial judge had two ways of resolving this, and he felt, and as he said in his order, or he said in the transcript, I don't think that what's in a TMO is a reasonable number. Why? Because first of all, it's an estimate. Second of all, it wasn't subject to any actuarial testing. Third, if there was a trial, the trial judge would have been under an obligation to reduce it to a reasonable amount to what was actually paid. And fourth, the assignment statute permits that. And fifth, the case laws, if you read Allborn and you read the companion case of Woes, I think we're somewhat fortunate, Your Honors, that we have two United States Supreme Court cases on this subject. Woes and
neither of which answers our question, though.
Well, but it says to use objective benchmarks, and we not just benchmarks, but objective benchmarks. That means benchmarks that are based on some evidence. And in this case, there wasn't any evidence at all what was billed. I mean, other than what was in the TMO.
Well, you don't disagree, do you, that the amount at $776 is what was billed?
I don't think it was all billed to Medicaid, because this client was
billed for the services that were received by her.
But she was on Medicare and she was on Medicaid. And as Your Honors might know, Medicare is primary, Medicaid is secondary.
So at the most, the amount that should have been used was the amount that Medicaid billed. That was billed to Medicaid, not the amount that was billed.
Right,
to
they didn't produce any evidence of what was billed to Medicaid.
Oh, okay.
There could have been billings. That TMO was not very, very precise. I mean, that's why it should, that's why I think Judge Stern was right not to use it, because there wasn't any evidence to back it up. It was just a statement that was made in a trial management order. Of course, this case didn't go to trial, and the reason this case didn't go to trial is because under the Ski Safety Act, her damages were capped at $1 million anyway. Mm-hmm. So if we used a strict application of the Allborn case, if we had total damages, say at $5 million roughly, I think it was 4.9, and we had a recovery of one, then we would have had one-fifth, exactly what happened in Auburn. In Auburn, it was one-sixth, and so here, it's one-fifth. Now, Judge Stern did use a slight variation. He used a proportional reduction argument. The reason he did that is because they agreed to it.
The math comes out the same way anyway.
The math is the same. The math is the same. So basically, you know, we think that Judge Stern had the discretion to not use estimates in a TMO, that the only really reliable or objective evidence of what Medicaid paid is what is exactly what Medicaid paid.
So let me ask you the same question I asked counsel for the state. Isn't this really a dispute over who gets the benefit of the Medicaid discount?
Yes.
If there had been no Medicaid discount, we wouldn't be here fooling around, messing around, right? Who should get the benefit of the discount that Medicaid negotiated? That seems to me what this case is really about.
And I have an answer to that question on the page I just dropped on the floor.
I'll wait till you find it. I can't wait to hear.
The answer to that is Colorado statute says who gets the benefit. And that's under the recovery statute. If you look at section 10 in the recovery statute, it's in our brief. Basically says no action.
Tell me what? Give us the whole site, sir.
Yes, let me look at my index. I think it's 25.5-4, 302, sub 10.
Okay.
I'll give it to you exactly if I didn't remember it exactly. Uh, 25.5-4-301 sub 10, not 302, 301 sub 10. Basically, that statute says that nothing that the department does shall operate to deny the applicant or recipient the recovery for that portion of his or her medical costs or other damages not provided as medical assistance. So to me, that indicates that the benefit of recovering money that's not an obligation that was not paid for by the state is a benefit that the legislature has said goes to the recipient. And I think that's the result. You know, basically, these cases stand for the proposition that there should be some equity, some equitable apportionment. This is not a case where the taxpayers, the Supreme Court cases don't focus on the taxpayers. The taxpayers, the question is, what are the rights of the department vis-a-vis the rights of the recipient to achieve a reasonable recovery of damages? And it wouldn't be reasonable in a case like this where she actually recovered only $443,000 to pay $142,000, which would have been one-third of the entire settlement, which would have to last for the rest of her life, a quadriplegic. That's the kind of thing what Woe struck down. North Carolina tried to recover one-third in their case. The result of this case would be the same. They would recover one-third of her total recoverable damages.
Well, that's because, no offense meant it, but the attorney's fees and the expenses were quite high in this case, given the size of the settlement.
And they were high, and the reason they were high is because liability was contested. This was a ski accident case. They had to hire engineers. It was a mogul. They had to reconstruct the accident and so forth. So admittedly, they were very high. In my remaining time, let me get to our cross appeal. And I think that goes to the question of attorney's fees and costs, because if the basis for these cases is assignment, then the department stands in the shoes of the Medicaid recipient. They get an assignment of what she actually recovers. She does not recover herself, her attorney's fees, or her costs. Those have to be allocated out. They should be allocated out. Now the department has a remedy. They choose not to do it. That is, they can intervene in these cases. They could actually go into these cases and go directly against the tortfeasor and say, you know what, the state of Colorado's paid $142,000. We want you to reimburse us for $142,000. They have that right. but they don't choose to do that right.
Do they have that right still if they don't, if they're not made whole in this case?
They have that right. Not now, they don't have it. This case is concluded, but they would have that right up until the time the case was resolved. Yes. So there is a remedy there for the state if they choose to use it, but they have not. So the recovery in this case is really only $443,000. So whatever the formula is, seems to me has to be times what was recovered. So Judge Stern said, well, the relationship between your actuals, what was paid by Medicaid, and what your total damages were, which were stipulated to, is 2.9%, then you get 2.9% of your lien.
Of the net recovery.
Of the net recovery. And that's the basis of our cross appeal.
But then the Medicaid is bearing the burden of her negotiated attorney's fees, of her lawyer's decisions on how much to spend in the underlying case.
Right, and they would have the right to question that or to present evidence that that wasn't reasonable. They didn't do that.
Judge Stern would have loved that.
I think Judge Stern would love never to see this case again.
Well, he's retiring, so he won't.
Yeah. We spent the whole first day arguing about formula, but, you know, it was like going back to elementary math class. What's the denominator? What's the numerator? How does the formula work? Basically, the formula that he derived, though, I think flows from the Allborn and Lowe's cases. It's a very reasonable formula. It's scientific. I mean, it's as scientific as you can get it to be scientific. You know, I think basing a case on what someone puts in a TMO is about the most speculative thing one can endeavor to do. You really can only, and I think as Judge Ney said, it's really only what Medicaid paid that's relevant anyway.
Right, that's the only fact I think we have. What's in the TMO, I guess, is based on imagination, hope, and prayer.
Yeah, it's your best foot forward.
Yeah.
And, you've been a trial judge for a long time, you know, that hardly ever, that doesn't happen. Now, to the point that they have, that they would never recover what they could never recover fully, that's not correct. The closer one gets to what their total damages are, the more Medicaid recovers. The less that someone gets, it's true, the less they recover.
In any settled case, that's settled for less of the value.
But they always get something, Your Honor. It's not like a make-whole case where they don't get, where like the insurance company in a make-whole case, if they don't get the policy limits, may not recover anything. That never happens here because they always recover something. As Woe said, there is a floor and a ceiling to every case. And there's certainly a floor and ceiling to every case here. It would be nice if Ms. SP had recovered more, but she was limited to the statutory cap in a ski accident case, which is $1 million. She's limited to that. She could recover more than that. So she got the maximum amount she could possibly recover, which really only compensated her for 20% of her actual total damages. And so that's fair and reasonable to reduce everybody by the same proportion, and that's what Judge Stern did, and that's why his decision should be affirmed.
Before you sit down, let me ask you one last set of questions. Is this a case that sets forth a formula that could be used universally in the state of Colorado?
I believe so.
It's not, is this a case where because you stipulated to the amount of the value, you stipulated to use a proportional allocation, that really this case may not be a case where we can say this is a formula that should be used going forward? It's just the proper formula in this case, given the stipulations.
I think it would be proper to use it as a formula. The only argument you would have over the formula is what numbers you plug into the formula. Obviously, if you don't have a stipulation and total damages, we can have a trial. We can have evidence on that. I would hope that the Allborn case, we wouldn't have to do that. I think if we had a formula, I think in most cases, in my experience, we would come to a stipulation as to total damages because it's based on expert opinion, and typically the department doesn't hire their own experts.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just quickly, Mr. Solem made several points about we can't use the numbers from the trial management order from the tort case because those numbers simply aren't realistic. The fact is the denominator in Judge Stern's formula came from the trial management order, which came from the economic loss report prepared by SP. It also inserts the past...
Well, stipulated.
Yes, sir. So we are using numbers from the trial management order.
Stipulated numbers.
Yes, sir. Okay. The denominator. But if we place a number in the numerator that is not a similar unit, we're comparing apples to oranges in that case. Mr. Solem said, well, everybody should take a discount in this case because SP settled for less than what she expected to recover at trial. But not everybody did take a reduction. Her tort attorney did not take a reduction in their fees and costs. Medicare was reimbursed at 80% of what they had paid. And Medicaid is being asked to take an 80% reduction to only recover 20%. So there is a fairness argument for the taxpayers of Colorado as well.
Does the statute that Mr. Solem cited stand for the proposition that the discount ought to be borne by Medicaid, so to speak?
No, sir. That's certainly not my reading of that statute. That statute says Medicaid, you can go after the tortfeasor yourself for the lien, but that doesn't prevent the individual from also suing the tortfeasor for the remaining damages. The remaining portion of her damages. I don't understand how that statute applies to this case. Okay. Mr. Solem would be able to answer that. On the net versus gross settlement, which one do we apply the percentage to? Nothing in Colorado statute, federal statute, Alburn or Woe says make a reduction for attorney's fees. Alburn certainly talks about here's the only thing we look at, allocate damages between medical and non-medical damages. They don't address attorney's fees. Colorado statute says the lien is recoverable from the entire settlement as limited by federal law, and the federal law is the Alburn case, and there's simply nothing there, nor was there anything cited in the briefs to support that argument.
Thank you, Counselor. Time is up.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel for fine arguments in this case. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. And...